views and opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the hosts and represent no other individual organization or entity. Break the News 125. I'm Roger.
And I'm Adam. It is the 30th of September 2023, and we are doing this remote. So fingers crossed my internet is okay.
You're sounding clear as a bell to me, Adam.
At the moment, yes. But we'll see.
I'm also hoping my microphone holds up and behaves itself. As you can probably tell from the slight echo there, it didn't. And it's my fault because I forgot to turn my recorder on, so we had to use the backup, which for some reason has an echo on it.
But I can certainly tell you that I didn't get a PB today on my park run. I equaled my PB, so it don't actually class as a PB. So I got 19.49 at Lister Park Run again. It was a slightly different course change. But you said to me you wanted me to beat Imran Khan one day. Well, I did it.
And did Imran say anything to you?
No. I'm really bad at one thing that I've never actually told you. I'm really bad at recognising faces. If they're an unfamiliar face and I ain't actually seen people a lot, I always struggle to actually recognise them. It is really, really embarrassing, but I'm literally face blind. I know people if they're familiar and I get to know them, but it does take me a long time. But I knew that he hadn't overtook me because he always comes and whizzes past me at the end. So I knew that he clearly hadn't overtook me. So I knew that we were clearly going to be in front or behind or not there.
That whole face blindness thing you talked about, Adam, that's getting worse for me as I get older.
Really?
I'm getting much worse now at remembering names and faces than I used to be.
Tell you one thing, it's got an awful lot worse since I did my political canvassing, probably because I've been speaking to so many different faces that my brain just can't take any more faces, and that's probably bad for me at such a young age that my brain just can't memorise any more faces.
I might be at the same threshold because a lot of ex-pupils come to my school and see me. I've been at the school now for nearly 15 years, so that's hundreds of young adults now. And some of them come up to me and say, "Sir, do you remember me?" I do recognise them, but I don't know their name to go with a face. But I'll remember what they do. So I'll say, "Well, I can't remember your name, but I do remember that you peed yourself on the school trip to Heptonstall once." You know, stuff like that.
It's probably much harder for you because the kids, when they've left school and they've become adults, they've grown since then. So so their appearance will have changed since when they were at school. So it might be much harder for you to remember them because their appearance has changed.
Oh, yeah. And it can be terrifying. Like, I'll be walking along a Bradford Street at night and a giant 6'5" bloke will come up to me saying, "Oi, you! Do you know who I am?" "No, mate, I don't know." "It's me, Ali! You taught me when I was in year 6. I'm like, "Oh, God."
Yeah, that's like I can remember how specific people run and the running style, etc. I can remember the most embarrassing things rather than the actual face. I probably know people's behaviour more than anything.
Well, you won't have seen Imran Khan this week because he was eating your dust. So I dedicate this podcast to him.
One of the reasons I struggle probably as well is because with my autism, I don't make as much eye contact. So because I'm not making eye contact and I might not necessarily be looking at the person, that might be why I struggle to remember faces a lot more. So that could explain things a little bit more because it is very common in autistic people.
If you want to talk to us about any of your experiences or about the news or share anything with us and be part of the show, you can do that by emailing breakthenewspod@gmail.com. But before we get into the podcast, Adam, I wanted to share an experience with you that I've had today from our city of culture, because something happened to me today in Aldi that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So I went in Aldi at Clayton. As I was walking around, it was a Saturday, midday, so very, very busy. Lots of families in there, lots of kids. Many people treating it as an all-you-can-eat buffet. you know, just eating sandwiches and pies and stuff as they walked around. But then when I got to the checkout, I did that thing where, you know how you have your shopping bags and you put them in your trolley and open them up so you can take your stuff off the end and put it in your trolley, straight in the bag.
Yeah,
well, I did that. And when I got to the end of the checkout, before scanning my stuff, the lady at the checkout said, before I scan your stuff, can you just show me the inside of all of your bags? And I had to show her the inside of all my shopping bags to show I didn't have anything and that I wasn't nicking anything. And she said, we're doing that to everyone. We have to, because there's so many people nicking. And I just thought, that is so sad.
It is so sad, but it's got to be done, unfortunately. It's terrible. That's probably explains why they want hiring up new staff, because they probably want they need new staff to be able to handle the theft. Because, like I say, theft is really, really rife in shops now, isn't it?
And to be fair to them, at the other end of the store, there was about four or five members of staff having to handle a woman who apparently they had caught nicking, and she was none too happy about it.
I surely support what they're doing. I support them trying to get shoplifters, but the trouble is they have no powers to arrest them. All they're doing is they're just stopping them from taking the products.
It's a shame, but a necessary evil. I hope that we can start trusting each other a little bit more and society can improve a bit more, because that's just shameful.
And there's been some more shameful news this week. So I've ChatGPT'd an article from The Guardian here about GB News.
Our friends at GB News. Regular listeners will know Adam and I are both big GB News fans.
Yes, and we both watch GB News regularly, I believe. I don't know if you watch it that often, but I certainly do.
GB News is definitely in my rotation of news sources. I listen to it two or three times a week.
Fair enough. So Calvin Robinson is the third GB News presenter suspended in 3 days due to fallout from Lawrence Fox's misogynistic comments. Robinson expressed solidarity with Dan Wootton, stating that standing up for him is standing up for GB News. A channel staff member commented on the suspensions, emphasising the ongoing internal divide at GB News. The channel is facing 12 active Ofcom investigations, struggling with its approach to broadcasting. Robinson, a regular pundit and religious show presenter on the channel, previously gained notoriety for promoting alternative COVID treatments. He criticised careerist staff at GB News and emphasised the importance of supporting Wootton to prevent the channel's demise. Wootton and Fox were initially suspended for offensive remarks, prompting internal investigations and potential terminations. And they have received lots of complaints about this. But do you think it's right that GB News is suspending presenters on a channel that's supposed to be free speech?
Before I answer that question, Adam, let me ask you one. Do you think GB News will still be on air by the time this podcast goes out?
Yes.
I think so too. And I think, as a company, yes, they have a right to suspend staff for whatever reasons they like, really. But that doesn't mean it's right or not. I think what Lawrence Fox said was idiotic. The man's an idiot, and I don't think any excuse should be made for him. I don't think GB News should be giving too many grovelling apologies, though, because if you watch GB News, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, free speech and some spicy opinions. So I think quietly suspending him would have been a better thing to do. But then having his apologists also get suspended, like Dan Wootton, I suppose he did allow that to go out, and as a host, he didn't responsibly manage his show, did he? So I can understand that. And as for Calvin, well, I don't like him as a character. I don't like his views. But just for sticking up for Dan Wootton, I think he's too far removed to actually have him sacked. I think they've been a bit harsh on him there. But he's not a very good presenter anyway, so I'm not crying a river over it.
Right, I've got a lot to say about what you just said there. You said Lawrence Fox is idiotic. I actually quite like Lawrence Fox. I'm not exactly sure what he said.
He said of a woman, comics like, who'd want to shag that?
Okay, I know, fair enough. So he may not have liked that woman. He's still entitled to his free speech, and I think it should be a protected human right. And yes, it may have been a bit idiotic, as you mentioned, but can we not also say that some of the leftist views that are also idiotic as well, and we allow them on air? I don't think suspending these presenters is the right decision, and I just want to note that they have been suspended, so not formally set, so they're still investigating it. I do think, personally, that they've received a lot of pressure, and they're basically running away from Ofcom here, so they're being a bit self-centred, rather than protecting the company's values of promoting free speech.
They have, and that may come back to bite them and cause them to lose quite a bit of their integrity. They've only just recovered from the whole Mark Stein thing.
I don't think Ofcom will close them down by the time this goes out, but I do think that if it carries on, Ofcom may close them down. But I do want to mention that GB News viewing figures are growing rapidly, so they're now very big, and that might be what's preventing Ofcom from closing them down, because there'd be a lot of disappointed people if they did close them down.
I think what will kill GB News is low viewership. Incidents like this will give them a spike and a temporary boost in viewership, and having good, interesting presenters and opinions on there will help. And I think in these three, they haven't lost three of their bests, I don't think.
I don't know, Lawrence Fox and Dan Wootton were quite popular. I'm not sure about Calvin Robinson. I wasn't overly keen on him, although he did talk sense, but I don't think he was the best presenter, let's be honest. But yeah, maybe they haven't lost the best ones. I think one that I really like to watch is actually Nigel Farage, who was a politician.
My top three on GB News are Neil Oliver, Nigel Farage, and Patrick Christie's. Shout out for Michelle Dewberry as well. She's good.
Yeah. I think, like I say, I think they've got an awful lot of good presenters on GB News. Obviously, people are going to try and bring the channel down if they don't like it particularly.
And, of course, all the other news channels and news media are going to try to bring them down. So that's why they're all going on about how dreadful it is and how GB News are going to close down any day now, because they're desperate to put the boot in.
If GB News closes down, then the world's going to be a very boring place.
There are other places, especially where you can find more right-wing opinions. Talk radio and talk TV is quite a good source, but you have to deal with Piers Morgan and Nick Ferrari on that. There's the Lotus Eaters. They can be quite good, but some of their content is a bit geeky and niche. And I'm sure there's plenty of other places out there, but you have to be careful not to go down rabbit holes that are too extreme.
Very extreme stuff gets closed down anyway, doesn't it, in this country?
Eventually. Or it gets whoever's running it into a lot of trouble. And then, of course, there's Adam and Roger Break the News, who you can listen to every week for your news opinion.
Yep. And we do have some lively debates, although quite a lot of our views are relatively similar, so they're not going to be as lively as the debates that you do see elsewhere. Probably not actually promoted it very well there, but we do have a bit of a laugh on here, and that's why we like to do it.
Exactly. If you do strongly disagree with me and Adam and really want Rumble, then come on the show, take part, breakthenewspod@gmail.com. On a related bent, the BBC has put some guidelines into place for its presenters. I'm sure it's just coincidence that this is all happening at the same time as the GB News debacle. They've introduced new guidelines for its flagship presenters following the Gary Lineker controversy we had earlier this year. Long-time listeners will remember our Lineker episode. The rules will allow presenters, such as Lineker, to express views on issues and policies, but stops them from engaging in political campaigning. Presenters on flagship programmes must not endorse or criticise political parties, individual politicians, or political debates during elections. The guidelines aim to strike a balance between freedom of expression and upholding the BBC's impartiality and civility in public discourse. Violating these rules may result in disciplinary action or termination of contracts for employees. The guidelines do not apply to BBC staff and freelancers outside flagship shows and news and current affairs, but they are expected to respect civility in public discourse and avoid bringing the BBC into disrepute. Fair enough, or an attack on free speech, Adam? What do you
think? Definitely attack on free speech and a big cover-up here. You mentioned about bringing the BBC into disrepute there. Now, if they're trying to prevent that from happening, that's called a cover-up. And also, it doesn't really matter what the individual news presenters' views are outside the organisation, and I think they should be allowed to express them, surely. What I'm more bothered about, in terms of impartiality, is what they actually do when they're actually working, for example, on the news websites, on the TV channels, on the radio stations, and obviously in the documentaries as well, etc. I think that's where they need to be impartial. I think the individual presenters and staff at BBC, I think they should all be entitled to the views. But obviously, yeah, when they're working, obviously, yeah, they've got to follow the impartiality guidelines. So this is definitely a cover-up.
It mostly sounds about right to me, actually, that they're allowed to have their own opinions off air, but when they're on air, they're the BBC.
But you've just mentioned they're not allowed to do it on social media, though.
During election times.
It's still a cover-up of people's views, because, like I say, if they disagree with the BBC's views, then they're going to try and get rid of them, and that's the whole point of this.
Well, the part of this that I do agree with you on is where you talked about avoiding bringing the BBC into disrepute, because if certain people were less afraid of speaking up, maybe a lot of injustices could have been avoided in the past. So that does concern me a little bit. So, yeah, it does seem a little bit heavy-handed to me, but generally it's not so bad. It sounds quite similar to what my contract at my work is like.
Yeah, and also, like, at the radio station that we broadcast, we weren't allowed to share our political views during election time, which is hence why, partly why I've stopped broadcasting there, because I can't be volunteering for a political party and also expressing my views there.
I like us having an impartial public broadcaster, and I like the concept of BBC News. And when they get the impartiality right and the reporting right, it is a brilliant national resource.
But how can you get the impartiality right? Because it's very hard to gauge a left and right political spectrum, for example, because every person that is writing the news article has their own bias. So it's pretty much impossible to have an impartial broadcaster, really, isn't it?
The BBC have a sort of rule of thumb where they get about the same number of complaints of left-leaning bias as they do of right-leaning bias. So they think it's, well, we must be okay then.
I think they should just privatise it, forget about impartiality, and people can listen or watch the things that they choose. That's how I think it should be. I think it should be a free market, like America style.
I don't really listen to or care what the personal opinions of any BBC presenter are, though, really.
Do you not?
No, because none of them have much expertise that I'd actually respect.
I don't think a lot of them are very good anyway, although a lot of them are not going to go and say things because it'll affect the career, and obviously they're on really high wages, aren't they? That's the reason why they're not coming out and speaking out.
See, I'm racking my brains right now to think of a BBC presenter whose opinion I respect and would listen to. Like, for Gary Lineker, if I wanted to know about football, then I'd respect his opinion. But I don't respect his opinion for news. Certainly not. Who's he to tell me about politics?
Journalists from the BBC have come out and gone to other channels, such as right-wing ones. Andrew Marr, he used to present a politics show on the BBC.
God, he's boring.
And he's now gone on to LBC.
He's boring on there as well.
I haven't listened to him on there, but it just
don't. He's boring.
it does show you that they may actually have opinions, but then they're too afraid to speak out unless they're leaving. And then obviously he actually mentioned about that he wanted to have more right to free speech.
I think everyone's entitled to free speech. What you're not entitled to is an audience.
No, but if they choose to hire him, then you get an audience, don't you?
Absolutely, but if people aren't listening, you probably won't have an audience for long.
But he can have his audience on Twitter, though, can't he? Because he's built up the audience himself.
For as long as Twitter lasts.
Yeah. UK workers are taking an increased number of sick days, averaging 7.8 in the past year compared to 5.8 pre-pandemic, according to research by the Chartered Institute for Personnel and Development. Stress, COVID-19 and the cost of living were identified as major factors causing this rise. The study of 900 organisations highlighted minor illnesses, musculoskeletal injuries and mental health issues as primary reasons for short-term absences. The public sector reported higher sick days compared to the private sector. The shift in working culture due to the pandemic and economic challenges has left employees feeling stressed and disengaged, especially those working from home or with limited social interaction. The CIPD emphasised the need for organisations to address workplace health issues and cultivate a supportive culture for employees. Dr. Audrey Tang, a psychologist, emphasised the importance of understanding and addressing employees' needs effectively. What do you think, Roger?
The sickness of COVID has made people much more wary. And it's a tough one because some employers say, if you've got a cold or sniffle, don't go spreading it. And then there's other employers who say, you know, take some Lemsip and get yourself in. Then there's employers who bounce between the two. You know, they want the best of both worlds.
Which you can't have the best of both worlds, but what he did note is that the private sector has lower amounts of sick days than the public sector. I wonder why that is. Probably because the public sector are much more relaxed and allow employees to have more time off.
You'd think the option of working from home would reduce sick days as well, because if you were feeling a little bit murky, then you could say, oh, well, I'm going to work from home instead.
That's true. But people are not going to suggest that option, though, because they want a day off work as well.
So it's another kick in the teeth for working at home, then.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be working very well, does it? Because every time I hear about working from home, it always seems to fail.
You see, I'm more of the soldier on brigade. I haven't taken a day off work sick in 3 years. So I really want to keep that streak going.
Do you think you can keep it going for another 3 years?
It depends, because I don't want to put myself or my fellow employees or the kids I work with in danger of getting sick either. So you have to make a judgment call every time.
Yeah, on the severity, etc. and everything. But the thing about it, if you stopped off, say, for example, every cold you had, you'd be taking an awful lot of time off.
Working in a public place like a school, you get every cold going. Eagle-eared listeners can probably hear I'm on the back end of a cold right now.
And I think I might be just starting when we're going back to work. But like I say, yeah, it is what it is. It's like, obviously, because I'm on cramped buses now with loads of, I think, high school children and some college children as well. The mostly students that are on the buses in the morning. So that's not ideal.
And it's the freshers' time of year and winter's setting in. This is peak time for those peaky little sicknesses that happen. And COVID's on the up, apparently.
It's not great news, but that's all normal at this time of year with all the viruses. And COVID's just going to be like another winter cold virus anyway, isn't it, by the sounds of it? And that's probably why it's increasing anyway.
Another reason for the increase could be the lack of decent healthcare, what with the NHS collapsing and less doctors and nurses and higher waiting lists, you never know.
If there's more people waiting for treatment, they may not be able to work if they're very seriously ill. So it's bound to have an impact. So it doesn't actually surprise me about this news.
And we've talked before on this podcast about possible solutions that the government could have for the NHS crisis and the lack of doctors and nurses. And the Nuffield Trust have come up with one that I'd love your opinion on, Adam. They suggest that student loans in England should be written off for certain health staff after they complete 10 years of NHS service to address a dropout crisis among nurses, midwives and other frontline staff. The Trust found that about 1 in 8 trainee nurses, radiographers and occupational therapists fail to finish their training, with close to 1 in 5 leaving NHS employment within 2 years of starting. However, ministers have rejected the idea, stating that support is already in place through the current student finance system and training grants for eligible students. What do you think, Adam?
I don't really know, because I can understand that, yeah, we don't want them going to other countries and the NHS is in crisis, and these are probably the degrees that are not Mickey Mouse degrees, and these actually offer permanent employment, don't they? We do need a lot of healthcare staff, and we can see that from the waiting lists. So I think, yeah, it might actually be an acceptable policy. Plus, it'll also encourage more people to study this type of qualifications, which is probably important because we need to train more people up to work in the NHS, don't we?
Yeah, and this definitely would help. I think it mostly makes sense, but I can sort of understand why ministers might reject it if they think, well, if we're incentivising NHS workers, what about other public sector workers? Might education staff, for example, want their student loans written off next?
And not
what
just to, yeah, that
civil
and
servants, architects, and there's people who work in the children's services. There's all sorts of public services who need the expertise of a degree. Why give the NHS special treatment?
And not just that, though, it also comes with a big cost as well.
I get that. It would be a very expensive policy, but maybe if they think about that support that's in place already and if it's being effective, maybe they can rejig things and give this a go. I think they should.
Yep, I'm happy for them to give it a go, and I think it'd be a good thing because it'd encourage more people to do those types of degrees.
So you can pretty much guarantee that they won't, but at least the option's there, and maybe someone will suggest it when an election starts coming up.
Yeah, maybe or someone like Suella, who always seems to say things, but what does she never do?
Do anything.
So Suella Braverman backs armed police, reassurances on legal concerns after officer charged with murder, review ordered due to officers' fears over charges in London shooting incident. Chris Cavell's death sparks protests and Met police grapple with armed officer reservations. And I also want to add in here, because it was slightly older, some of the Met police did actually walk out in protest over this, but there was still enough to police London anyway. But police are actually fearful of being arrested themselves, aren't they? So I can see why Suella wants to back this. Do you agree with her?
I agree with her in principle, but she won't actually do anything about it. I think our armed police should feel safe and protected to do their jobs. And that comes with the training they get and the expertise they have. I'm not saying they should be protected if they're negligent. Of course, it should be looked into and it should be looked into well. But it needs to be done fairly. And these lads and lasses are in life and death situations. That's why they have them guns. That's what they are called out to. That's enough stress without the worry of legal recourse 15 years down the line.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I do support the police. There's always going to be mistakes, but we need to actually get them tackling crime and not policing tweets as they're doing at the moment.
And the case that has sparked this a little bit, the Chris Cabba shooting, is actually very fair to me. It's quite clear that the officer involved acted reasonably. Chris Cabba was driving towards him in a car about to crush him with another car. The officer got his gun out and pointed the gun at him, and this guy continued to drive straight at him. In that situation, it's him or me. So the officer chose to discharge his weapon. One shot, one kill. And that's what happened. It's horrible and unfortunate, but I think the officer acted reasonably.
Yeah, sometimes they've got to take the tough and hard line. I know the public may not like it and they may support the criminals.
The media who are behind Chris Cabba say things like, well, he was unarmed, but a 3-ton car travelling at 40 miles an hour is a weapon, if you ask me. He was using that car as a weapon and he got, I won't say what he deserved because I don't think anyone deserves death, but he got what he got.
Yeah, I agree. Although what's interesting, I don't know if you've seen polling on this, but actually more than 50% of people actually back the death penalty in the country.
Yep. And I'm very against the death penalty because I think you can make people suffer in far better ways.
Yeah, I agree. You can actually make people suffer in other ways. But it's also very costly the other ways, and it often means that we need extra police.
Somebody once said to me that justice is about two things, really. There's two parts to it. First of all, the rehabilitation of the offender, if possible, but also for people to have a sense of justice. And the justice system has to get the balance of all them things right. Otherwise, people get very cross.
Do you think the justice system's too weak at the moment or too strong?
Too weak.
I agree.
And that's why crime is such a problem and why I'm getting my bags searched in Aldi.
Yeah, that should not be happening, but obviously it needs to happen. Yeah, they need to deter criminals from going in and stealing things. If they know it's going to be secure there, they'll stop doing it.
Sorry, Adam, I don't think I asked you what you thought about that.
I can see both sides of the argument. And I know killing is absolutely awful, but sometimes the crime is so horrible to the victim. I think sometimes the only way that a person can be properly treated as justice is probably through the death penalty. And that's like, for example, a murderer. If someone was a murderer, then the death penalty might be an option because obviously they murdered someone else. So they're going to want to receive justice probably by them being murdered. So I can understand where the death penalty comes into place, but I think it should always be a last resort.
And I prefer punishments that are far more protracted than the death penalty. But one thing that proponents of it do argue is that it saves a lot of time and resource, because once a criminal's dead, you're not spending a fortune looking after them and keeping them in a cell and giving them medical care, which is a point. I think that it's a price worth paying, though, if it keeps people safe. The other thing that the death penalty does is it sends a very strong message. So maybe one happy medium from Justice Minister Roger here could be perhaps if you commit certain crimes that are bad enough, then you get put in a death penalty raffle. And every year we have, let's say, 5 public hangings. So all of these criminals who do these horrible acts, and I'm talking, they have to be like really horrible acts, they're living in fear for their lives because their name could come up any year.
I don't think that would go down very well because some of the people would say, well, some criminals are being treated worse than others and some are being treated better than others.
Let's look at the draw. That's life.
Yeah, it is. That's true.
And I tell you what, people would watch that. There would be record viewing figures.
Record viewing figures, but there'd also be record amounts of complaints at the same time.
Oh, yeah, Ofcom would have to have the night off for the public hanging. I wonder which BBC presenters they'd get to do that one.
I don't think the BBC presenters could take that.
Hi, I'm Gary Lineker, and this is the public hanging. Oh, dear. Oh, sorry, for listeners, for the dark sense of humour there.
Yes.
It's been a long week.
Yep, it has. And I think we've enjoyed debating the news. And
I'll say it one more time. If you have a complaint, breakthenewspod@gmail.com because Ofcom don't regulate podcasts.
And you can also share with your family and friends too. So be sure to get that out there. Do you support the death penalty? Well, let us know in the email and we can share it in the commencing weeks. We will see you again, probably around the same time next week.
Peace and love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Many that live deserve death. And some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them? Do not be too eager to deal out death and judgment. Even the very wise can assume ends.